Life, politics, parenting, and navigating the daily chaos. It's time for Politely Rude with Abby Johnson.
Well, hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening once again to Politely Rude with Abby Johnson. I am Abby Johnson, and I am once again coming to you from Austin, Texas, where it is a gloriously beautiful day outside. And I'm glad for that because my daughter has a soccer game. And of course, that's outside. And they even have a snow cone truck coming today. So, I mean, it's like the perfect day because I love snow cones, but I don't eat a lot of sugar. So I have to get the sugar-free kind, which, I mean, that's kind of a bummer because sugar-free is not awesome. But I eat it anyway because I really like the ice. So anyway, that's what I'm doing this afternoon. And I am just so excited to be with you today. And I'm really, really excited about our guest. This is something that we, you know, I try to bring you guys topics that are just, you know, they vary. You know, I don't want to just always talk about abortion. I mean, you know, of course, abortion is the most important topic to me, but I try to bring you topics that are varied, you know, and important topics across the spectrum. So today I'm bringing you someone who I know you're going to love, because what we're talking about today is something that really it affects all of us, and I don't fear that it's going to affect us more in the United States, but I don't have that fear because I don't fear, but I have a feeling that we are going to see more of it. There will be a rise of it, possibly over the next 4 years. I love the work that she does. And so I'm going to introduce her here. I really want to make her name very, I don't know the best way to say it, like very like Italian, you know, like we're on a boat in Italy or something. But anyway, her name is Gia Ciccone. And she's an amazing woman, amazing. She's young too, and which is also amazing. She's a humanitarian. She's a motivational speaker, and she's the pro-life director of Bienvenido US, which, by the way, Bienvenido is one of my favorite words to say of all time. I don't know why, but it just is. She first began her humanitarian efforts in 2017 and has since traveled to Central America, East Africa, and all throughout the Middle East. During her time with refugees, she had the opportunity to speak with them about the atrocities they faced and the horrible acts of violence they suffered for refusing to renounce Christ. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, you know, I hope that we are the type of people. I hope that we are the type of Christians that, you know, if we were forced to either die or be tortured or renounce our Christian faith, that we would be the type of people who would stand for Jesus Christ. And, you know, we really aren't the people who have ever had to make that choice, but she has been with people who have, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But, you know, after she heard these stories, God laid it on her heart to bring awareness to the growing crisis of Christian persecution and to make a positive impact in the lives of the suffering faithful. And this led to the founding of For the Martyrs, which is her group. And For the Martyrs is a nonprofit organization that really seeks to raise awareness about Christian persecution, advocate for religious freedom, and provide aid to suffering Christians across the globe. And I'm so thankful that she has this organization because I think this is something we really don't talk about enough, which is why I'm so glad she's on the show. And additionally, you know, to her public speaking and pro-life advocacy and religious freedom advocacy, Gia is a published writer. She's been featured in tons of articles and interviewed on television and radio shows. You may have heard her. And every day she's impacting culture through the media, through her social media account. You can find her at Genuinely Gia. So Gia, thank you so much for taking your time to be on Politely Rude. And I mean, you're just an amazing woman. And thank you for all the work you're doing, and welcome.
Abby, thank you so much for having me. And as you said, this issue, the issue of Christian persecution, really does not get the media attention, or even in our communities of faith, it doesn't get the attention that it really deserves. So I'm grateful for you for having me on and covering the issue of Christian persecution today.
Tell us about some of this time that you have, you know, spent overseas. I mean, you've been to places I've never been. You've talked to people that most of us have never had the opportunity to talk with. I mean, tell us some of these stories. Tell us really what Christian persecution looks like. You know, tell us what the faces of these people look like who have really undergone persecution that we don't know. I mean, we think my Twitter got banned. I'm being so persecuted, right? Like somebody gave me the finger today. I'm being so persecuted, right? But we really don't know persecution in the United States, right? Tell us about, you know, what these people are really going through in these other countries.
Of course. And when we say Christian persecution, there may be some of us listening that ask the question, well, what really is Christian persecution? Christian persecution is the systematic targeting or aggression of any kind toward Christians solely because of their faith in Christ. What does that look like? That means that Christians are facing loss of their businesses, loss of their property. They're being targeted in the education system. In many places throughout the Middle East and even in the Gulf countries, Christians are seen as second-class citizens. So when they go to court to fight an issue or to fight a case, their testimony or their whatever they're testifying is worth half of what somebody else, the religious minority, which is a lot of time Islam when we're looking at the Middle East. So their testimony can be worth half than someone else's. In the most serious cases, and the people that I've had the opportunity to sit with, for example, the Iraqi and Syrian refugees, they've suffered under Islamic extremism, which means that ISIS or Islamist militant groups actually came into their cities, came into their homes, and gave them the option: convert, you're going to be killed, or you have to leave. So we had a mass exodus and really genocide of Christians in Iraq and Syria, where Christians were making the decision to stand for Christ and risking even death, not willing to renounce their faith. Some of the stories that I've heard, and a story that always stays with me throughout all of my travels and my work, had the opportunity to sit down with the Iraqi refugees and really speak to them about what they suffered. And I met a young woman who was probably around 19 years old when I met her, and she was young and she was beautiful. She had a beautiful life before ISIS. And what happened was Islamist militants came into her home and charged her family with this question: are you a Christian? And the family answered yes, knowing that their yes was going to cost them everything. Then ISIS actually killed the brother in front of their family, kidnapped their sister, and they threatened the family that they were going to come back and kidnap their other daughter if they didn't convert or leave. So they left Iraq with nothing but their passports in their hands and fled to Jordan. And this is just one of the stories of the thousands of Christians, tens of thousands of Christians who are suffering under Islamic extremism in the Middle East. But Abby, it's really not just Islamic extremism. We're also, when we're coming to countries like China and North Korea, Christians are suffering under the hands of communism and the government.
Now, there is one person I think of in the United States when I do think of Christian persecution, and that is Jack Phillips. Jack Phillips, this guy, you know, he is, of course, the baker in Colorado who has been sued now over and over and over again for, you know, refusing to bake a cake for homosexuals, those who are transgender, not because he's mean. He's not a mean guy. He's a nice guy. but because it violates his religious beliefs. And he has lost basically his business. I mean, he has lost so much. And I think, you know, there's one guy in the United States who can say, you know, I have really been persecuted because of my religious beliefs. It's really Jack Phillips. And I feel like there's going to be possibly more and more of this coming over the next few years. I mean, what do you think about this? I mean, we look at sort of the Equality Act coming down the pipeline. I mean, what are some of your thoughts about that?
I would say that you're absolutely correct. And even what we've seen in the last year with COVID and the way that governments, I'm in California, and we had some of the strictest restrictions on COVID here in this state. And even throughout the United States, we've seen an increase of hostility toward Christians. And we've seen, governors, we've seen mayors, we've seen states take advantage of COVID to restrict religious freedom and particularly target Christians within that. And even last year, we've seen radical Marxist groups and leaders within these groups, namely BLM Inc., call for the destruction of Christian property and Christian churches, saying that somehow Jesus is promoting or propagating white supremacy. And as a direct result of these calls, we saw churches burned to the ground. We saw Catholic and Christian property destroyed, and we've seen an increased hostility toward everyday Christians. And absolutely, you hit it right on the nose. When we saw the Equality Act get passed in the House, and even before, I wrote an article that was published in the Rogue Review that religious freedom was on the ballot in the 2020 election, and we should have taken that much more seriously. So what Christians are facing if the Equality Act is to be passed in the Senate is our churches are going to be under extreme restrictions by the government. And the government is seeking to actually control what we're allowed to preach on the pulpit, what the church is allowed to do, how nonprofit organizations are allowed to operate. And this is a very dangerous piece of legislation that every Christian should be standing up and speaking out against.
I think people don't really understand religious freedom. I have to believe that's true. You know, I've been talking about the dangers of the Equality Act, even in regards to abortion. You know, doctors are no longer going to have any sort of conscience protection if the Equality Act passes. And people are like, well, what does that mean? You know, what that means is that if you are a medical professional, if you are a nurse, if you are a medical assistant, if you are a doctor, and a woman comes in and she wants what they term a therapeutic abortion, okay? So let's say she has a baby. Let's say she's 30 weeks along, and she decides at 30 weeks that because her baby has a heart defect that's completely treatable, okay? And you know, as an OB-GYN, that heart defect is completely treatable with medication. But HR 5 passes, you will, as a physician, have absolutely no choice but to kill that 30-week baby just because the mother wants it done. You as a nurse will have absolutely no choice but to participate. You as a surgical tech will have no choice but to carry that 30-week-old baby's dead body into the pathology lab. None of you will have any choice but to participate because your religious objections will no longer matter. I don't even think people understand it. It's like you have to lay it out for them like you're in a kindergarten classroom. It's like religious freedom is something that we don't talk about enough. I think people have taken it for granted. And now it's on the chopping block, right? And we see things like this vaccine passport, you know, coming into play. Guys, we are on the verge of becoming the CCP.
Yeah. And just to add to that, I think what people may or may not realize when we're looking at the Equality Act is this piece of legislation is extremely sinister because it sounds great, equality for all, you know, and, you know, as Christians, maybe everyday Christians, we want to promote equality for people. But what this bill is seeking to do, as you said, Abby, and as I iterated just a few moments ago, is really control how the church operates. It wants to erase the freedom of conscience. It wants to erase what pastors are allowed to preach, because if you are on the pulpit and you're preaching against abortion or you're preaching against anything LGBTQ, the state can actually hold you accountable now for those words and press charges or whatever else will come out of this bill. Now, I want to create a parallel for you. In China, churches are allowed to operate. So they have within their constitution that they have quote unquote religious freedom so long as it doesn't go against what the government views as dangerous, or as long as it doesn't contradict what the government's agenda is. So they have sanctioned churches, they have state sanctioned churches, and you have to get a permit to operate. Any church that operates outside of the state sanctions, pastors will go to jail, churchgoers will be fined, you will be held accountable, and charges will be pressed against you for organizing public disorder and fraud against the Chinese government. We can see this piece of legislation that's looking to be passed as a very slippery slope into a very similar state-sanctioned church, how the body of Christ is allowed to operate. Every Christian should be standing up against this. Every person of faith should be speaking out against this, because this will absolutely restrict our religious freedom.
You're listening to the Edify Podcast Network. We'll be right back. This podcast is part of the Edify Podcast Network. Edify is a faith-inspiring app that brings together thousands of the best Christian podcasts in one place for your listening enjoyment. Cut through the noise and grow your faith by diving into the world's top Christian podcasts today. Download the Edify app for free from the App Store or Google Play, or by going to edify.app. That's edifi.app. This is the Edify Podcast Network. Welcome back.
You know, Gia, this reminds me, there was an episode, I can't remember what, I don't watch this show very often, but there was an episode on Black Mirror. Do you ever watch that show?
No.
Okay, so there was an episode on Black Mirror, and, you know, most of the shows are, I don't really like it, but some of them are kind of cool, but most of the shows are sort of like futuristic, like what could happen, you know, in the future. And one of them was, you know, everybody had this like device, or it was sort of like a, I guess it was like their smartphone, but it was like something that was programmed into their smartphone. And so you had interactions with people throughout the day. And so, you know, your interactions with people, you could give them a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And so, you know, if you cut somebody off in traffic, it would sort of scan them and you could give them a thumbs down, you know, or if you had bad service in the coffee line, you could give them a thumbs down, and everybody got a rating. Right. And it was this social rating system. And it determined, you know, if you got jobs, it determined, you know, if you got good health care, it determined all these things. And I remember watching it a couple of years ago and thinking, that's crazy. Right. Like that's crazy. That, you know, that would be crazy if that ever happened. Let me tell you something, guys. You may think that what the words coming out of my mouth right now, you may think, oh, Abby Johnson, she's gone Alex Jones on us. Like she's a conspiracy theorist now. Let me tell you something. That is the exact sort of social control that China has on its people. Okay. They don't do it though individually. It's not individuals giving a thumbs up or a thumbs down. It's the government. Okay. That's what this vaccine passport program has the potential to do to us as individuals. It is a social control platform, just like the CCP has on individuals in China. All right. Now, there are big tech people coming out and saying this. It's not just Abby Johnson saying this. I've been watching videos from big tech people. That's why Salesforce That's why other companies like Salesforce, they are bidding right now to the United States government, trying to get the contract on a United States vaccine passport program. Okay. Because it would be like a multi-billion dollar contract. And these companies would be able to operate a social control program on all of us. And whether you got the vaccine, you would be loaded up all the time in this program. So, you know, like if I want to check my bank account, I go to, you know, let's say bankofamerica.com and I put in my login and I go in, I check my accounts, I look at my accounts, and then I log off and Bank of America can't track me anymore. But these vaccine passport programs, you don't ever log off. They're logged in. You're logged in all the time. So they're tracking you all the time. Okay. So if you don't comply in these different areas, they're tracking you, they're logging you, and it's a social control. And you may be thinking, Abby, this is insane. You have gone insane. You've gone off the deep end, but I have not gone off the deep end. I have been listening to these people that run these big tech programs. Okay. Everything I'm telling you is true. We are moving closer and closer and closer to communist China. And this is what they want. And if you don't believe that that Christians are on the verge of religious persecution, just like Christians are persecuted in China, you are not paying attention and you need to wake up. This is real. It is coming down the pipeline. And this is a hill that Christians need to die on. This is the hill that Christians need to die on. Religious freedom. This is it. If we lose our religious freedom, guys, as Christians, we have lost everything.
Absolutely. And Abby, someone might be asking, well, what happens when you violate these restrictions? What is the reality when we're looking at a country like China for somebody who goes against state mandates? We're not just talking, oh, you get a fine and you have to pay it. We're talking you get sentenced to life in prison and re-education camps. And what does life in prison look like? Well, recently my organization had a woman who actually fled persecution in China and came to the United States. She had to travel by bus for 15 days to escape China. And she was sharing her story as to what happened because her family was operating what is known as a home church in China. So a non-government sanctioned church. So they were operating as the body of Christ, defying the government restrictions, and they had a large 8,000 member church. Her father went to prison. He's still in prison to this day. They haven't heard from him since November. And what they do is they try to get you to turn in everyone's name that you know that's participating in the church. They get you to share or try to fabricate information about how they were coming against the Chinese government, how they weren't abiding by the laws, about where they were, who they were associating with. And they torture you by not feeding you, by feeding you also medication that makes you crazy and lose your mind. And you might be thinking, you're hearing this, okay, this sounds crazy. That would never happen in the United States of America. But what we're seeing is it happens slowly and then suddenly. We are at that stage now where they're slowly trying to take in these communist agendas, see how much we can take. And that's really what happened throughout COVID with the church is the government, and this is coming from someone who looks at Christian persecution all day long and studies it, the government was testing, are Christians going to stand up to this? How much influence can we take on the church? How much of their freedom are they willing to let us have? And I would say, unfortunately, I think that churches failed across the United States. We had some bold pastors, and even here in California, we had some pastors standing up to it. But I think you're absolutely right, Abby, that we cannot miss this moment. And now is the time. We honestly dropped the ball with COVID. I think churches should have stood a little stronger in that. But now is really the time where we can make up for that and stand strong and say, no, we're not actually going to abide by this. We are not on the boat with mandatory vaccine passports. And our religious freedom and our First Amendment rights are so precious to us that we're willing to defend them. And when you talk to someone who's from China, and a person I would encourage everybody to follow who's listening to this podcast, and perhaps you follow him, Abby, is Bob Fu, who's a major voice against the Chinese government. he's ringing the same alarms that we're ringing. So this is serious. And I encourage everyone listening to take it as seriously as we're talking about it.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right, Gia. All of this COVID stuff, it was not about a virus. This was a test. Guys, COVID has a 96 to 99% recovery rate. Okay. It was insane to me. If you would have told me 5 years ago that the overwhelming majority of Christian churches would allow the government to unconstitutionally shut them down for a virus that has a 96 to 99% survival rate and recovery rate, I would have told you you were lying. I would have said, nah, not, no, absolutely not. I would have said, absolutely not. Not the churches I know. No way. They're willing to stand up to that sort of persecution. But you know what? They sure did. Almost all of them did. I mean, and some of them got fined. Some of these pastors that didn't got sent to jail.
Yes.
I mean, there's pastors in Canada right now that are sitting in jail because they kept their doors open. I cannot believe what I saw take place during COVID. And as a Catholic, I could not have been more disappointed in the Catholic Church. I mean, it was disgusting. And the bishops completely cowered. The church completely cowered. The Pope cowered. Everybody did. I don't know any Catholic churches that stayed open. It was ridiculous. And I thought, really? I don't even know what everybody's scared of. I mean, if you're a Christian, why are you scared of dying? If you're a Christian, you should be sure about your eternal salvation. So what are you worried about? It was bizarre to me. And I couldn't believe the fear that took over our Christian church. I couldn't believe the fear that took over Christians. If you would have told me that Americans were going to allow the government to force them and their children to wear a mask everywhere they go, I would have said, no, that's stupid. No way Americans are going to do that. But they did. And now they're talking about, you know, and I'm not taking the vaccine. So I don't know how you feel about the vaccine, but it will be a frozen day in hell before I allow that vaccine into my body or my children's bodies. And now there are people giving this vaccine to their small children, to their infants, who have a 0% chance of dying from COVID. They are using this experimental vaccine that changes their DNA. They're injecting that into their children's bodies. And I'm just like, if you would have asked me if people would do that 5 years ago, I would have said no way. But this is where we are today in the United States. And it's because fear has taken over. And fear is such a powerful motivator for people. And what I always say is that fear does not come from Jesus Christ.
Doesn't. And I think a really powerful lesson that we can learn from the persecuted church, and especially in places like China, where you would think because of the persecution that these Christians are suffering, that the church is getting really small. But in reality, the church is flourishing. And every single day, there are literally hundreds of thousands of people coming to Christ and joining the underground church in China, because they have to make the decision. This is the decision that it comes to when we're looking at these countries like China, like North Korea, like Iraq, and in Syria. What is happening to the church? Christians have to make the decision. They have to make the stand. Am I willing to lay down my life? Am I willing to risk everything for the gospel, for my faith, and for Jesus Christ? Do I believe in the gospel? Do I believe that I am more than a conqueror through him who loved us? And when we look at the persecuted church, 9 out of 10 times, Christians make the decision to lay down their life. They make the decision to stand for Christ. We in the United States and in the countries, not just here in the United States, but in Canada and even in the United Kingdom, Christians can learn from the persecuted church by taking that courage. And we need that boldness. Mm-hmm. We need Christians to make the decision that nothing is going to make me waver in my faith. And I am willing to lay down my life for the gospel. And that looks differently. I mean, for us right now, it means standing up to these unconstitutional restrictions and unconstitutional mandates that are looking to be put forward, not just in the church, but for all Americans. But very soon, if we don't stand up now, we could be looking at what making the decision to actually having to lay down our lives. And it could very easily be life in prison, serious re-education camps, or even death down the line. And it sounds crazy, but again, let's look at it and see exactly. China is a perfect country to look at it and compare what happened to the church and how they went from really, I mean, we looked at communist China in the 80s and then things kind of opened up and the church gained a little bit of freedom. But really in the past 5 years, we've seen the government really re-put the stronghold on churches and Christian persecution increased rapidly in the last 5 years.
I want you to talk about these re-education camps because I think people sort of, they talk about Uyghurs and people are like, what's a Uyghur? and they don't really know what that is. And people sort of just say it in passing. I want you to talk about that a little bit. And, you know, what is a re-education, that's a nice word for what it is, right? A re-education yeah. camp. Talk about that a little bit because I think people don't really know what it is. I think they don't really know, what the Uyghurs are going through right now. Just talk a little bit about that population.
Yes. So the Uyghur Muslims are a religious minority living in China, and they're in the northern part of China. And what's happening is we call it re-education camps, but that's really just a sweet word for concentration camps. And what's happening is a slow genocide of Uyghur Muslims in China, where they're taking Uyghur Muslims by the trainload, millions of Uyghurs put into these concentration camps where they're forced to work. First of all, we have the forced labor, but even more serious, they're tortured. A re-education camp means that they're trying to remove their faith from them, and they're going to do that by torturing them, by forcing them to take medication that makes them lose their mind, by forced sterilizing women, and oftentimes torturing women through rape. And well, they'll have men beat women. And they take their children too. It's not just women and men, it's also children that are being forced into these camps. And then we have the sitting president of the United States of America speak about this issue and call it a difference of cultural norms when there are other countries who are actually speaking out about against this genocide. And a recent report was just released that there is the same thing is now happening to Christians, where it was always kind of slowly happening to Christians and they were put into, many years ago there were re-education camps, but we're seeing the resurface now in a very similar way to what's happening to the Uyghur Muslims is now happening to Christians, where they're sent to secret re-education camps. And of course, China is not letting any media or anyone come in and see what's really happening in their country. So this is all happening in silent, and there's no serious pressure put on the Chinese government to encourage them to protect their citizens and give everyone their human right of religious freedom.
Yeah. Are there people who can actually get out of these concentration camps? I mean, have you been able to talk to anyone who's gotten out of them?
It's very difficult and it's almost impossible. And a lot of times what happens is they'll go to these camps and they'll never be seen or heard from again. And if they do get released from these camps, they're not the same person that they were when they went in because of the torture, but B, because I keep talking about these pills, but what's happening is they're giving people medication that almost makes them have dementia. So they don't remember who they are. They don't remember who their family members are. They don't remember what their life was like. And they become almost like they're a walking person, they're a talking person, but they're not the person that they were before they went in. So those are the types of people that get released from these camps. We have amazing organizations like China Aid and Bob Fu who work actively to get people released from these prisons, but it takes serious government intervention to get people released from the prisons and from the concentration camps.
I think it's good that people understand what's happening in China. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, businesses that are continuing to do, have business in China. I know that there's been, you know, talk about, you know, that's a reason to boycott Nike. There's, you know, Disney has a lot of dealings with China. There's, you know, and that's a thing that we can do as Americans, is to say, look, we're going to do everything that we can to not buy, you know, products from China. I don't know that it's possible to never buy anything made in China, but, you know, we can do what we can to, you know, to try to, you know, not buy things that are made in China, to not do that. I mean, it's hard though, when there are these atrocities going on, and we know they're going on, and you know that our country should be speaking out about it very boldly, and you've got our president saying, well, it's just a cultural difference. I mean, they're running concentration camps, but that's just the way it is in China. I mean, it's like bizarre. I mean, how, like, I don't even understand, like, how he could ever think that that's just a cultural difference. I mean, can you imagine? Like, I mean, what if he was the president during, you know, during World War II? I mean, would he have just said concentration camps in, you know, Nazi Germany were just a cultural difference? I mean, why? I don't understand why these people are not getting the attention that they deserve. I don't understand why no one is fighting to free them. I don't understand why, you know, there aren't tanks rolling up in there, like fighting for them, you know, fighting for justice for them. It's bizarre to me why there hasn't been some sort of military alliance, you know, joining forces and going in there and freeing these people. China has become such a power, and people are so scared of China that they are willing to watch people literally die and be tortured, and they won't go get them.
I want to just also reiterate that we're not just talking, you know, 1 or 2,000 people. We're talking millions of people, like the Uyghur Muslims, like Christians. We're talking millions of people who are in prison right now, who haven't spoken to their family, who are in concentration camps, being castrated and being sterilized in these camps. And the world knows about it, and nobody's talking about it. But I really want to encourage the everyday person listening to this to not underestimate the power of their voice in speaking up about this. It's up to us. If our government won't do anything about it without us saying something, then we must be the ones who mobilize and who speak out against this issue. Throughout my travels, when you speak to someone who's persecuted and you ask them, what is the greatest need? They'll always say two things. You know, we'll bring them humanitarian aid when we've done work with the refugees. And even recently, we were in Armenia with the internally displaced Armenians as the result of the war there. And we ask them, what else can we do? And they will always say two things. First, they will almost always ask you, please continue to pray for us. So it's so important that the body of Christ here in the United States is praying for our persecuted brothers and sisters, and praying for the Uyghurs, and praying for all of those who are suffering at the hands of extremism. But the second thing they will say is, thank you for knowing about my suffering and speaking about it. So it's so important that we're raising our voice, and we're the ones that have the power. When the citizens of the United States of America come together, they organize and they use their platform and their freedom to speak out and to put pressure on our government to hold these governments accountable. That's when change happens. And so I would encourage everyone to use their voice, use their platform, speak out about Christian persecution and the persecution that's happening, and continue to pray for our brothers and sisters who are suffering this violence and, honestly, crimes against humanity.
It is a crime against humanity. And I would encourage people to write their state legislators, to write their, you know, congressional members, and even send a letter to the White House. You know, you can write the same letter and just put different people's names on it. I really believe that, you know, writing letters matters. And people think nobody's going to listen to me. Look, they pay attention. Legislators pay attention to the letters that come across their desk, to the letters that come into their offices. And if they receive, you know, let's say they receive 1,000 letters from people listening to this podcast saying, you guys need to pay attention to what's happening to these Uyghur concentration camps. They're going to pay attention. And so they have to pay attention. And there's thousands of people that listen to this podcast. And, you know, if we could get 1,000 people writing letters, people pay attention to that. So, you know, I would encourage everyone to take the time. It'll take you like 15 minutes. Write up a letter, you know, send it out. That would make a powerful difference. Well, tell us about your nonprofit For the Martyrs. How'd that get started and how's it going?
Well, we really started it when through my travels. Initially, I was traveling with my grandmother's nonprofit. She has an organization that focuses on international crisis relief. So as we touched on earlier in the podcast, it's not just work with the refugees, but a lot of our work was with the persecuted church and to the Iraqi and Syrian refugees, and really hearing their stories and realizing that Christian persecution is such a serious issue. And that caused me to do deeper research into the issue of Christian persecution. I began that research and I started having conversations with people here in the United States. An amazing organization, Open Doors USA, puts out a yearly world watch list. And just recently they put out the statistics that now there are over 340 million Christians around the world who face historic levels of persecution. And in 2020 alone, Christian persecution increased by over 30%. Another study showed that Christians are the most persecuted religious group. So 1/3 of the world faces religious oppression, and an overwhelming 80% of the oppressed are Christians. I'm going to be bold enough to say that Christian persecution is the gravest underpublicized human rights crisis of our time. When I came to that conclusion, I asked myself, why is nobody talking about this? Why aren't our communities of faith rallying alongside the persecuted church? So through that, the Lord laid it on my heart to found For the Martyrs. We raise awareness about Christian persecution because I believe knowledge inspires action. And the more people who are aware about the suffering that's happening in the body of Christ, the more can be done to become a solution. And through that, we also founded the March for the Martyrs, which is a march to stand in solidarity with the persecuted church around the world. Just this past year in 2020, we held the first March for the Martyrs in Long Beach, California, where we had Christians across all denominations come together to stand in solidarity with our brothers and sisters who are suffering persecution. And this year, we'll be bringing the March for the Martyrs to Washington, D.C. in September. So I encourage everyone, if you're in the D.C. area, and even if you're on the East Coast, to come down and to join us, to raise your voice. This is a tangible way to make a difference in the life of the persecuted church by raising public awareness, praying for the persecuted, and advocating on their behalf.
That's so awesome. And I just love what you're doing. What's the website?
ForTheMartyrs.com. And we're also on Instagram, so you can follow us at March for the Martyrs. And we're on Twitter as well, For the Martyrs, and Facebook, March for the Martyrs.
Well, I just love it. I love what you're doing. I love that you're, you know, bringing awareness to this issue. I mean, I said it already before, guys. Religious freedom, this is the hill to die on. This is it. You know, this intertwines with every part of our beliefs. This intertwines with abortion. This intertwines with the LGBT agenda. This intertwines with you know, the schools we send our children to. This intertwines with everything you can think of. Religious freedom is really at the core. And because we as conservatism is founded on Judeo-Christian principles. And so religious freedom is at the heart of who we are as conservatives, as moral people. It's religious freedom, that's it. I mean, the buck stops and starts there. And so this is such an important topic. I love that you came on the show. I love that we're talking about this. I hope that people are really heeding your warnings here, because you have seen this in a way that I have not seen it, that probably most of the listeners here have not seen it. And so I hope that they're really, you know, listening to you here. And I got to tell you, I want to go on a trip with you. I want to like go with you somewhere. I think it would be such a, an eye-opening experience. And, I got my passport. So I want to go. I want to go one day with you. So thank you, Gia, for everything that you're doing. I know that my followers are going to want to support the work that you're doing. So forthemartyrs.com, and also go follow her at Genuinely Gia on her social media accounts. You will love following her, and you'll love following all the work that she's doing, the amazing work that she's doing. So thank you all for listening. Thank you, Gia, for being on.
Thank you so much, Abby. And again, I just want to reiterate my gratitude to you for giving a platform to the plight of the persecuted church. I want to encourage everyone, don't let this episode and don't let our words discourage you and get you down. No, we're actually, knowing that we're Christian, we operate and we fight from a place of victory. So this is a battle cry for Christians across the United States to stand strong and to stand with the persecuted church.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we know that in the end we have victory, right? I mean, we know who wins the battle. But in the meantime, not only do we have to stand up for those who are being persecuted, but we have to stand up for ourselves, for our own country, so that we don't become those who are currently being persecuted. Because, you know, I think about, you know, the adults who are being persecuted, but I think about the children. And, you know, I feel like, you know, I raise my children to be those who would be willing to die for their faith. But I don't want them to have to die for their faith. I don't want my children to have to make that choice. And I think about all the children who are having to make that choice in other countries. And so this is important that we really start, you know, taking up this issue, taking up this cross and paying attention to it. In the media, we need to pay attention to it politically. We need to start taking action. So I really appreciate all the work that you're doing, Gia. Thank you so much for being on Politely Rude. Thank you all so much to all of our listeners, and we will be back with you next week.
Thanks for listening to Politely Rude with Abby Johnson on the Edify Podcast Network. Tune in next time for another powerful exploration of life, politics, parenting, and tips for navigating the daily chaos. And for more faith-inspiring podcasts, download the Edify Podcast app on the Apple and Google Play Stores or at edify.app.